Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Women Tech Charge. My name is Amri Imafidon and I'm your host. Today I'm super excited because I'm joined by the coolest professor, Professor Maya Panchik, who is Professor of Effective and Behavioural Computing at Imperial College London, but she's also the research head at the Samsung AI Lab in Cambridge.
We can take, in fact, image of whomever, we can record the audio we want, and make this person, a video of this person from this photo, speak whatever audio we recorded on spot. What matters is your trust in yourself. Sure, you will get to know once, you will get to know three times. Usually, at the end, you come to a place where they say yes to this idea. And I think it's really important, this pursuit of your... not dreams, it's more like your true ideas in which you believe.
Thank you very much for joining me, joining us, being on the podcast.
Thank you.
So you are a professor in all the coolest things that we have at the moment. When we talk about tech trends, we have AI, we have deep fakes. There's lots and lots of things that are part of your remit. But you're also with Samsung doing this as well, which is a rather large consumer brand. Before we go into what you do now, I want to roll back the clock a little bit. Only a couple of years. How does one end up being a professor of computing at Imperial College? What was your journey to being this top academic?
So I'm born in Belgrade in Serbia. All my family was always studying. So going to the university was a regular thing.
Okay.
I started actually studying math. I was very good in math. So I started studying math back in Belgrade. But then we had quite a problem in the country. Mm-hmm. The country was in the war. At that time, my sister left for the Netherlands and I went to live with my sister. When I came to Netherlands, they said to me that I cannot resume the studies just like that, that I have to start from scratch again.
And which year were you in?
I was actually in the fourth year of my studies.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, so they said like I have to retake everything. And but that actually was very interesting because that was also the 92. Mm-hmm. And they said first I have to learn the language. And by the time I learned the language, it was 93. Okay. In 1993, the internet came out.
Okay.
And that was for me really an important point in my life because I realized that, in fact, we could all be connected through that something called internet.
Right.
And that computers are actually enabling this. So it was like a completely logical, in my opinion, step to, instead of going to pure math, start studying computing.
Right.
So I did the studies at the Delft University of Technology. I did my bachelor's, I think, in 2 years. And then I did my master's in another year. Mm-hmm. And then... they asked me whether I want to stay for my PhD, and I said, Sure. I mean, it's interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And also the topic was very interesting because I was asked actually to do face analysis.
This was in which year was this?
This now we're talking about 1997.
Wow. Okay.
So in principle, it was a very interesting idea for me, and we started working on automatic face analysis.
And this was in the Netherlands?
In the Netherlands. So okay. We were actually, at that time in 1997, there was only one group in University of California in San Diego, mm-hmm. led by Teres Sejnowski, and Marnie Bartlett at that time was his student, and she was doing exactly the same automatic face analysis.
Awesome. Two women either side.
Exactly.
Of the, there we go.
And then we realized in 1998 actually that there is yet another group, okay. which is the group of Takeo Kanade and Jeffrey Cohn at Carnegie Mellon University, mm-hmm. who do the same. Mm-hmm. So there were three groups in the whole world actually that did these crazy things, which is automatic facial expression analysis rather okay. than just automatic face facial analysis right. where you recognize people.
Yeah. Course. Okay.
And so that's how it started. I stayed as an academic at the Delft University of Technology for another 5 years. And at that time, we were thinking as a family to move away. So we came to UK and I came to Imperial College. So I applied just like everybody else mm-hmm. applies. At that time, I think it was 121 applicants who okay. applied. And they again said, you know, I was like associate professor at Delft, but when I came, they said, no, you will start on the lowest level, assistant professor. And the dean at that time, actually he became dean later on, but he was the head of department, of computing department. He was saying, look, don't worry, because, you know, if you're doing well, the progression here is fast. And okay.
He was true to his word. It's fantastic to hear your story, but it's not one that's typical specifically for, let's say, women and underrepresented groups. And it's something we come up against quite a lot is that, you know, you do have this kind of falling away of women. As we go up higher in the academic ranks, you have fewer and fewer women that stay in the discipline and stay within the field. So what is it that, I mean, other than good promotion, what is it that has kept you within academia, and what are the kind of frustrations that you've had beyond, you know, being told to start again twice?
Everybody copes with certain things. Not everything is accepted. Mm. Not everything is easy. Mm. I mean, all of this. I think really what matters is your trust in yourself. And I think I learned that when I was young, you know. Sure, people have different opinions. But if you believe truly in something that you have as an idea, mm. sure, you will get no once, you will get no three times, but you know, at the end you will find, you can also from all of these no's, you can learn what people didn't like, mm. what are the things you could work on more, what are the ideas or risks that you have to address. And once you have all of this, usually at the end you come to a place where they say yes to this idea. And mm-hmm. I think it's really important, this pursuit of your... not dreams, it's more like your true ideas in which you believe. For me, it was like, for example, the whole idea of recognition of emotions and mental states from signals such as video signal of somebody's face or audio signals of somebody's voice. Mm. It was pretty far-fetched, you know. I mean, how much we really know about psychology. If we are so good in psychology, why everybody has a problem, you know, to communicate yeah. with each other, you know. So the whole issue is that you have to believe that this is possible, and I really think it's possible. And I think this technology can actually allow me to see things that I, as a human, with my human capacity of the eye and the ear, cannot see. Mm. So this is really fantastic. And if you think of a technology as an enabler, this is something that can make this idea true. And then there is this whole cohort of applications where you can use these kind of things.
Exactly. So that is what you have ended up doing as the professor, as part of your remit, as part of your work as well at Samsung. There's lots of technology within this facial expression recognition, as we can call it, that you've been doing since the 90s, that you've been able to then extend out to lots of different uses. So can you explain to us maybe some of the kind of core technologies in the work that you're doing before we talk about the uses for them?
So the you have, say, life and research before 2016, mm-hmm. and you have the life and research after 2016. why? Because around 2016, that's actually pretty late, but say, around 2016, deep learning became really, really popular.
Right.
And the name of the game changed completely. Mm-hmm. Before that, we were using many various techniques for computer vision and for machine learning. So how this whole thing works is you have a video signal. You have to analyze this video signal. So what is a video signal? A set of pixels, right, per image. And then you have a number of images per second, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to do is you analyze these pixels to find first the face. Once you find the face, you then can analyze the features in that one picture, like, mm-hmm. for example, the edges, or, you know, where is dark, where is light part.
And we
of
call
the,
this feature maps, right?
These, that's, for example, feature maps, mm-hmm. you can call them. In principle, there are a set of features that you need to extract from each image.
Yep.
But then what you have to see is to track the changes in those features, because the changes in those features will actually tell you something about this expression.
Yep.
And then how you do that, everything what you have about these features, you put in a certain machine learning technique, and that can be statistical machine learning, like support vector machines, right? This is old-fashioned. Or it can be something like neural network, right? This is also old-fashioned, but currently we call it deep learning, and that's new fashion.
Brand new,
right?
Rebrand.
Exactly. So in principle, what you want to get out of this machine learning is the interpretation of this facial expression. So for example, if I smile, the changes in the pixels around my mouth and my eyes will be such that they actually indicate this is the smile. So I will learn from many examples that this is how a smile looks like, right?
Okay.
So that's how the technology approximately works.
Mm-hmm.
And currently we are using, actually don't like to say that, but we are using mostly deep learning for everything. And the reason is that the performance is really incredibly better than other machine learning techniques. Previously, we couldn't do that because the processing power was not there.
Yes, I was going to say. Yeah.
But now that's actually the memory, the capacity of the memory, the processing power, everything is now much better. So you can actually run these large networks in real time.
Mm.
Previously, we couldn't do that. And you can get results which are in factors better than the results from standard machine learning. However, a big problem with the deep learning is that deep learning is not fully explainable. So things which are happening within this black box called deep network are very difficult to prove theoretically. So this is one of the problems that we face with the deep learning. And
that's because a lot of these kind of feature maps and the things that we're tracking in between, we don't necessarily know how that's been processed or what the relationships are that have been done, because it's so many calculations
we do not even
that were
know,
done as part of that, right?
We don't even know which features are taken.
Okay.
So let's start from that, because currently I actually input into the deep network the whole region of the image which contains the face.
Yep.
And which features are taken from that, I have
no clue. The algorithm completely chooses, right.
Right? Okay. So sure, we can, you know, you can visualize certain things. We know that actually there are certain kind of edges and curves that are taken into account by convolutional neural networks. But in principle, you know, which exactly in what is the trigger to take something as a good feature or not? This is something that, in fact, everything happens by itself. And we also do not know whether the features that you train the network on a set of images will be really applicable to another set of images.
When we look at image recognition gone wrong, this is where we see kind of the example where you see kind of people of color as gorillas, or you kind of don't spot that.
This is because these are the so-called biases, because you didn't have in your training set enough of examples. Mm. Such examples that would actually tell these are also features that you have to take into account.
Mm.
You have to be very careful about the data that you use. Mm. And you have to clean this data very well so that there is no bias, or to add the data that there is no bias. And once you have that, so you have unbiased data, which is like almost impossible, but okay. If you have that, then in principle what you learn will be correct.
Time for a break. Send me a message using the hashtag #WomenTakeCharge, and please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
There's some amazing use cases that you're working on. Should we start with the autistic children example?
So one of the problems that we have with autistic little ones is that they miss something which we call gestalt. Gestalt is the ability of the brain to see objects as a whole. So when they look into our face, they don't see the face as a whole. They see the eyebrows, they see the eyes, they see the mouth. And all these things, parts, mm-hmm. are moving in all possible directions.
Mm-hmm. Independently.
And this is very confusing for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what is the reaction of the little ones? They don't look at our faces. What is the consequence of that? They don't learn. When do we laugh? What is the laughter a reaction to?
Okay.
What is the frown reaction to? As another consequence, they do not know how to express when they're happy, when they're upset, when they are sad about something.
Because normally that's a cue that they'd have taken from learning from others. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. So what we also know about autistic little ones is that they love technical things. They love robots.
Okay.
Because they understand robots. They're predictable, mm-hmm. and they are set of very clearly logically combined parts. Mm-hmm. Right? So we thought, okay, let's try to teach the little ones what are the typical expressions one should show when. But we do that with a robot.
Right.
And why we thought that this would work very well, because when you have a human teacher, human teachers they're very good. I mean, with teachers who teach autistic children, they are exceptionally good. They know what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we are only humans. So when we say, you know, and you know, when I'm happy, I smile. What people do is emphasis. They raise the eyebrows, they open the eyes.
Which is so, not a natural smile.
Exactly.
You're giving them the wrong data.
So So the whole point is that the little ones still get confused because that's not a full smile.
Yeah.
And with the robot, you can program. It's always a smile, right? And nothing else. So this is what we were, what the whole idea was. Have a camera on the robot that would observe the child. If the child, you have a therapist next to the robot and the child, the therapist says, okay, when you are happy, how you would, what would be your reaction or what would be your facial expression? And then the child makes a facial expression. The robot would recognize this and say, okay,
that means that
that's what I would do as well.
Yeah.
But if the child shows something which is not expected, the robot says, let me show you how I will show, for example. So this is the kind of loop, interactive loop, in which the little ones really get excited about it, and we believe can learn much better about these expressions.
So there's a lot of kind of good uses. Deep fakes, of course, is another kind of element of your work, part of your remit. You know, we've seen the Obama videos, the Obama deepfake videos that circulated as kind of examples.
We're entering an era in which our enemies can make it look like anyone is saying anything at any point in time, even if they would never say those things. How about this? Simply, President Trump is a total and complete.
What are the good uses? What problems do deepfakes solve?
So what we were originally interested in is the lack of data. When you work with deep learning, one of the issues that you need to address is having a lot of data to train your networks on. When you now work with expressions and emotions, you simply don't have this data because there is no such data. And it is very expensive to come up with this data because you have to label this data in terms of those emotions. And to do that, you have to have human observers who will watch all different data and annotate that.
Okay.
And we were thinking, okay, we are you know, a group that works on AI. We know quite a lot about generative adversarial networks. Generative adversarial networks are fantastic for generation of new data. Why don't we try to generate new data, given that we know how, we can learn how the expressions look like? So we just have to generate new data that would look like the data that we have, for which we do have annotation. So that's how the whole story started.
Oh my goodness.
And we came pretty far. Things that we currently can do are really impressive. We can take, in fact, image of whomever. We can record the audio we want and make this person, a video of this person from this photo, speak whatever audio we recorded on spot.
And what is that good for?
Our idea of building more data for training of our programs for emotional speech. This is very important for us because, you know, speech as such is understood by Alexa, by Google Speech, by all these speech engines, as long as you do not have any emotional outbursts. The moment the speech becomes emotional, the recognition rate falls down for 30%+.
So you have to speak to Siri with no emotion.
Absolutely.
God, that's really
lovely. And also, if you are older and you speak to Siri, Siri will not understand you. And the reason is that the speech rate at which you speak is not a prototypical speech rate that actually middle-aged people use.
My goodness.
So it is really interesting, and for that we wanted. This is why we wanted so badly actually
to generate
exactly, and hence build actually the engines that would work better, you know, on emotional speech, on accents, on older speech, and so on. But we needed a tool to do this,
but then
right?
We've created Frankenstein in order to.
But
do that.
Of course, there is a lot of bad use.
Yeah.
Another consequence of that is that we actually saw a lot of things how you can recognize that a video is fake.
Yeah.
So, and this is currently our main focus, to actually help, there is a large initiative by a number of companies and a number of universities at this point are mostly universities at United States. Mm-hmm. And I think this is, Facebook is also in, the reason is that they are preparing actually for elections and that they're very much afraid that, that these kind of videos could actually tweak the, right?
It will happen and it's coming, yeah.
So,
yeah.
And they started this initiative of actually fake videos detection, and we will try to help because we currently have this really good mechanism of generating the videos. We learned on the way quite a lot of how you can recognize fake videos.
So you are a pioneering lady, which is why I was excited to have you here. You were working on this facial expression recognition in the 90s when, you know, before this 2016 big bang, right, of the rebrand of deep learning. What do you think is coming next? I've got a quote here from you that says that you believe speech might be rendered unnecessary if brainwave-to-brainwave transmission aided by AI becomes reality.
Yes.
What is coming next?
Well,
tell us.
I think that our thoughts are much richer, and our brain signals are much richer than the dictionary that we have to express those thoughts and ideas.
Right.
We can actually catch these thoughts and ideas and waves with EEGs.
And EEG stands for?
For electrical and electromagnetic or something, graphs, right?
Yeah.
So what it is...
Which is the brain waves,
You have actually kind of electrodes which are put atop of your hair. Mm-hmm. It's like a kind of a cap that you put. Mm-hmm. And then these electrodes are all over your head. And they can catch the brain waves.
We had this at a hack once, someone controlling a quadricopter with their EEGs.
Yes.
Yes, the brain waves.
Yes. So very positive uses are actually using the brain waves, for example, for prosthetics. So you can have a robotic arm or a robotic leg
that you control with your
brain. You can control with your brain. This is like straightforward thing.
Yep.
However, exactly this gives me an idea that in principle, if you can catch these kind of signals, you can probably catch much more. Of course, we are just at the beginning of this. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of noise with which we have to deal. And I mean, all our facial expressions and movements are actually noisy. But it's also how this EEG is built. Nobody wants to wear these caps, horrible. So the issue is probably to build something which looks like a gadget, looks good, like, you know, the
headphones,
earphones. And then having, you know, on that part of your head caught electrical, the waves, the of your brain waves. The issue is, however, that I do not know whether we will have enough from just the central part of the head, whether this should actually go on the back of the and so on and so forth. So, but if this would be possible, what would happen is that we will be able to transfer these ideas in a raw format of the brain waves to somebody else. And I think this
literally
is brilliant.
Literally reading minds.
This is brilliant, isn't it? Because you don't have to put it into this very, very narrow tube, which is speech, which limits you horrifically in the way you can express your ideas and your thoughts.
Mm.
Right?
So literally, everyone becomes a mind reader.
I think this is, you know, I believe this is great, but it has a lot of issues. And one of the issues is that there will be no lies. Lies will not be possible.
We will live in a post-lies world.
There will be no more lies. Not possible.
I know that that's a rallying call for homework to lots of people. Imagine a world with no lies. Wouldn't that be amazing? After post-truth, we have post-lies.
There you go.
I think there is not a better place in this conversation for us to end than with that. That's homework. That's homework for our listeners. Go out, be that person. Maya's got it right several times before. I'm sure you're right on this one. Please come into technology. Come and be an engineer. Come and help us create a post-lies world.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.